I was researching my first historical novel, Fever 1793.
Writer Laurie Hulse Anderson.
And I came across a book that explored the slave owning of Benjamin Franklin, who had been my super big hero growing up. I just adored every aspect of Benjamin Franklin. And nobody told me he had held people in slavery for his entire adult life. We prefer, of course, to focus in on the fact that as in his 80s, he founded the Pennsylvania Abolition Society, so you think, oh, he's a good guy. But when I realized that this hero and this very significant founding father held people in slavery, at least 9 of them we have primary source evidence for, it nauseated me. It horrified me.
That was about 20 years ago. Laurie Hulse Anderson was at the very beginning of her career as a children's and young adult novelist, and she could not stop thinking about what it must have been like to be a slave in 1776, when the white colonists all around you were talking about liberty and justice, just not for you. So she started reading and researching. She wound up writing a trilogy called Seeds of America. It's about 3 young African-American slaves during the American Revolution. The first book was a finalist for the National Book Award, the second was a bestseller, and the third, called Ashes, is just out.
I would like to point out that the American Revolution lasted as long as the publication history of this series, so I have very, very patient fans, and I thank them for waiting for this book.
Laurie, how widespread was slavery around the time of the American Revolution?
In 1776, 20% of the population of New York City was held in slavery, and Philadelphia as well. You had slaves in Boston, Albany, New York, Vermont, New Hampshire, what we call Maine.
20%?
You're right.
That's 1 in 5. 1 in 5 people in New York was a slave.
And Philadelphia.
Wow.
Yes. Our country was founded on land that was taken away from the Indian nations and on the labor of unfree people.
So the terrible irony in this history, and the irony that is the bedrock of your 3 novels in this Seeds of America series, is that here during the Revolutionary War and the period leading up to it, here's the whole country talking about freedom and liberty and condoning slavery at the same time. And this is where your characters came from, right? You kept thinking about that and wondering what would it have been like to be a slave in New York or Philadelphia or Boston when everybody's talking about freedom and you're enslaved.
And they're not talking about you. They're not talking about people who look like you. That was the question that has driven me for 20 years. I did a lot of research trying to understand this, speaking to historians. And what really came to me one day, I was at the New York Historical Society. They had a magnificent exhibit about slavery in New York, and they published a book about it too. And I walked into the exhibit. They had a sculpture that was made out of thin wire, and it was a sculpture of a man and a woman who were trying to liberate themselves, trying to free themselves from slavery. But it was the brilliance of this piece of art is that if you moved a little bit sideways, you couldn't see it because the wire was so thin. And then you move back, and there they were. And it was such a testimony to the ever presence of people in slavery throughout the United States during the colonial time period, and then how so many people chose not to see them.
Yeah.
And as I stood, exactly, I stood there kind of rooted to the spot, and I heard the voice of Isabel, my main character, in my ear, and she said, "The best time to talk to ghosts is just before morning." And I pulled out my pencil and I started to scribble away. I think I had been researching for about 2 years at that point, reading every narrative I could that came from former slaves trying to tell their own history, trying to understand as much as I could, what did that feel like?
How old is Isabel when we first meet her? She's about 13?
She's 12 years old.
12, yeah.
12 years old. And she's in charge of her little sister, Ruth, who's 5. Their parents have died. They've been sold to new people who they don't know. And they find themselves transported to New York City in the middle of the most dramatic summer ever. The Patriot Army is occupying the city, and then the British show up.
And then what happens?
She's enlisted in a spy ring. There were lots of spy rings operating in New York City at that time period. One of the inspirations for this character came from an apocryphal figure I haven't been able to find good primary sources about, but it's a young girl named Phoebe Frances, whose father ran Frances Tavern in New York City during that summer of 1776. And people said that Phoebe was one of the people who overheard the assassination plot against George Washington, which was a real thing, and she helped to save Washington. So I fold that into the story. Washington commanded that everybody on the island of Manhattan needed to attend the hanging of the man who was in charge of trying to assassinate him.
Mm. Isabel is her her owners are loyalists.
Right.
Pro-British. Were there differences in how either the loyalists, the Tories, versus the Patriots treated slaves?
Well, and that difference changed over time when you have a war that lasts 8 years. Originally, the British, very early in the war, began to offer freedom to those slaves who could run and join them, first men of soldiering age and then all slaves. They didn't do that because they were nice. They did that because they wanted to disrupt the Patriot economy. When Isabel tries to do that, she's given back because it belongs, is held in property of a loyalist family, and the British didn't want to upset their loyalist friends. The Patriots, of course, had no interest in freeing anyone, but what the Patriots did have was a cohort of African-American men, some free, some still held in slavery, others who liberated themselves from slavery, who heard that call of freedom and signed up. George Washington didn't want them in the beginning of the war in 1775 in Boston. But then he begins to accept black men and boys into his army, which is where Curzon starts to get involved.
And right, Curzon I was going to say, this is moving into your second.
Into the next
second
one, right.
Book, Forge.
Exactly.
This one's narrated by Curzon. Yes. Who's heard all this talk about liberty and decided to join the Patriots, and the book follows him to Valley Forge. So how many African Americans fought in the Revolutionary War?
By the time they marched out of Valley Forge, about 10% of those men were men of color.
Wow.
By the time you get to Yorktown, the numbers aren't quite as hard, but I've seen some estimates as high as 20%. And remember, this was an integrated army. These were black and white soldiers fighting together for this cause. It was the last time our army was integrated until the Korean War in the 1950s.
I think I read somewhere that you actually have some ancestors who fought in the Revolutionary War.
Yeah, a lot of my mom's folks come from New England. So most of those people fought for the Patriots. One branch of the family were loyalists and wound up being banished to Nova Scotia for a while before they made their way back to Massachusetts.
Did that make any of this feel more vivid, or did you wind up, in terms of thinking about slavery, feel more complicit or implicated in any way, knowing that you'd had relatives back then?
I think it's more important as a white person in America to recognize the privilege that I'm living with every day. Not that I can't be responsible for the things done by people who lived before me, but I can and do take responsibility for what our country looks like today. And, you know, understanding, for example, that I didn't have to teach my teenage son not to walk down the street with his hood up and his hands in his hoodie. And understanding that, just coming to terms with that, I think, is where my responsibility lies in figuring out how to talk to friends, how to help people open up their eyes and their hearts a little bit more. That's way more important than whatever I feel about my ancestors.
So you've just come out with the third and final book in this trilogy, Ashes. And it's been, 8 years or something since the first one came out? So your fans have all been eagerly waiting to see what was going to happen with Isabel and Curzon. So give us a little synopsis. What's happening in Ashes?
Yeah, this is where everything wraps up. The end of the war, especially as fought in the South, was particularly ugly and bitter. That's where you really have the poor state of Virginia had the British run through it, trying to set fire to everything. South Carolina suffered deeply, North Carolina as well. People who were held in bondage, however, were able to take advantage of that chaos. One of the historians who vetted my manuscript has speculated there's a pretty good chance that more families, enslaved families, were able to liberate themselves, obtain their freedom because of the chaos of the American Revolution, than were able to free themselves through the Underground Railroad before the Civil War. So Isabel and Corazon and Ruth are caught up in that. It was a very frightening time for anybody of color, even soldiers who could prove that they were free people, because you had slave owners in Virginia so desperate to replace their workforce that they were grabbing people. It didn't matter what their status was. If they looked like they could be a slave, then they could be enslaved. While these people are trying to fight for the freedom of their country. So it's a perilous time.
I mean, do you think the way issues of slavery and freedom were dealt with or not dealt with during this period of history set the nation up for the Civil War, 100 years later?
Oh, completely. There was an opportunity when they were framing the Constitution to outlaw slavery throughout the entire nation. And as I understand it, the states of South Carolina and Georgia, whose economies were so dependent on enslaved labor, said, if you pass this, then we will leave the Confederation of American States. We will rejoin Great Britain. And so in order to preserve what was the fragile United States, our leaders, whom we love to admire so much, could not find the courage of their convictions to make all Americans free.
How does that history, knowing this, how does it affect how you think about racism in America today? I mean, you've done clearly an enormous amount of research.
It helps me understand how we got to where we are today. It's fascinating to discuss this with friends of mine who are white and to feel their resistance. Not because they're bad people. These are often very liberal, politically liberal, open-hearted people. But they don't know their history. They don't know how we got to where we are today. If they would let me teach a history course, I would start it in the protests after the death of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. And I would teach history backwards to show you how the institutional racial injustices of today and the lack of understanding of the lack of equalities in America today are directly tied to not only the founding of the United States, but the fact that we haven't had the courage to be honest about that founding. And while we can, and I certainly hold up people like George Washington with respect, and I'm a very patriotic American, I don't want to live in a country where the Declaration of Independence is written to a certain kind of person. It was written for all of us. Those powerful words are what bring people here to America from all over the globe to help us make what I believe is the most fascinating, diverse, strongest country ever in terms of its people. But we're not going to get there until we understand our history. Once we do that, then we can look at the present with open eyes and begin planning for a true United States in the future.
Laurie Halse Anderson. Seeds of America is a series of historical novels set in colonial America. The third and final volume is just out. It's called Ashes.